Hey, everybody, welcome back to another fabulous episode of the Over Sharon Show, a show that's quickly taking over the world. Shout out to all our new followers on the Brandon Bonanza on YouTube. Thank you, guys. We're really starting to blow up. We're making our way to 666. I think we're at 636 now. So we're really excited about that. Thank you guys so much. If you noticed that you had a comment that was deleted, just let us know. We usually don't put up with any funny business. So, but if you're being funny, you know, that's cool. Be funny. But anyway, we have a guest today, but I'm going to open up with a quote like we always do. And today's quote is from Carl Jung. Nobody can fall so low unless he has a great depth. If such a thing can happen to a man, it challenges his best and highest on the other side. That is to say, this depth corresponds to a potential height and the blackest darkness to a hidden light.
I'll probably have to hear that one again.
Yeah, I can even say it again if you want.
Okay.
Nobody can fall so low unless he or she has a great depth. If such a thing can happen to a man or woman, it challenges his best and highest on the other side. That is to say, this depth corresponds to a potential height and the blackest darkness to a hidden light. It reminds me a lot of what we say about, you know, the roads that we travel to get where we are today. We might feel bad about them or the things that we've done in the past or the person that we were. But I always say it becomes those evil, bad deeds or whatever you're doing when you can see the world in a different way and you switch your point of view. It could actually be like a superpower because you understand more how the world works and how you work and how it's just not the way you want to be anymore, you know?
Indeed.
And then
I was just kind of talking about that with a family member of mine with whom I've reconciled. Because in the past, I may have been like, because of my upbringing and being indoctrinated about certain things, I may have been judgmental. And I probably was. But then she also had her own issues with also being indoctrinated, but also perceiving me as being aggressive and maybe too pushy about something, about things, you know? So we recently just we're adults now, you know, and we can
awesome.
We can reconcile those differences. So it was that's good. Good stuff.
And that is great. That's always good. We can do that. I just wanted, before I forget, give a shout out to the Melodome. Awesome. Austin and James over there. I just got a shirt today. I've had them on my show. We've been on their show. They've been on this show. So check them out. Good people over there.
Check out the Melodome, and I'm going to pull a card here from the Luna Soul deck. And here I go. It is the Nine of Cups.
Ooh. Good card. I like that.
Sitting on a lotus flower, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
With a sun behind.
I like the patterning of the cups too, because they're like a support system and he's hovering above it with the sun behind him. Or her. It's probably her. No, great card. And cups, you know, they represent emotion and basically what we could, because they're vessels for water. So what water represents esoterically. And nine is that number of completion. It's the end of the cycle. It's like abundance and, you know, fulfillment. So I think that's great that because we have our returning guest, Davin, coming back on. And there's three of us and nine cups. So we each get three cups. Illuminati three, confirmed. Six, nine. Yeah.
Well, pardon me, sure. I might mute so that I can cough a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was funny because we were recording, not when people see this, maybe last month with Asha, and I thought I was muted and I blew my nose, but I wasn't muted.
Yes.
It made for great comedy. Some people are laughing about it. So, well, today's guest, as I mentioned, is Davin. He's a returning guest, and we're really excited to have him today. And we're going to be talking about Chiron, because that's something we didn't really, or Chiron, however you want to say it. We didn't really get to talk about that as much last time. So we're going to have a Chiron-Chiron-versation with him today. So I'm very excited about that.
A deeper dive.
But before we begin, why don't you tell people where they could find you if they want to subscribe to you or get more of you?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So website, Telegram, YouTube. And I'll send you the links. You can, put the links, the description or wherever. Let people find it that way is good. I'm on YouTube under NIVAD 17 Astrology, which is my first name backwards. NIVAD, that's just Davin backwards. NIVAD 17 Astrology on YouTube. And then there's links there to the website and my other links and other places as well.
Awesome.
So I guess we could talk a little bit about what this, I guess it's, they say it's some kind of asteroid or something floating around that's Chiron. And I've also heard as referred to as the wounded healer. So I think that's why that quote was kind of apropos. So why don't you give us a little bit of information, what you know about it, and then we can get in from there, I guess.
Yeah, let's give people the little background backstory. And you opened up with that wonderful quote from Carl Jung, and Carl Jung is actually the one who coined the term the wounded healer. So nice little tie in there.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
So he was working, as he did myth, archetype, all of this stuff that he worked with. And some of these mythological stories, you have these wounded healer type figures. Chiron is one of them, but there was a bunch that he was working with. And when he was working with Chiron's story was when he coined that term, the wounded healer. But anyhow, some background on Chiron. So Chiron was discovered in 1977 and discovered at a time when Chiron was in Aries. And at the time Chiron was discovered, there's a interesting little tie-in between the story behind the discovery of Chiron and the actual Chiron myth itself. Some interesting parallels going on. So at the time that Chiron was discovered, the astronomers weren't quite sure what they were actually looking at. Is it an asteroid? Is it a planetoid? Is it a comet? What is this thing? And it was classified and reclassified a whole bunch of times, back and forth. And eventually they said, this has some of the qualities of an asteroid and it has some of the qualities of a comet. It's kind of not exactly one or exactly the other. So, hey, what's a hybrid being? Well, in mythology, the hybrid beings were the centaurs, half horse, half human. So they called these objects that had qualities of this and qualities of that, a little bit of half this, half that, they called them centaurs. And with the discovery of Chiron, not only did they classify it as a centaur, they also named it after the most famous of the centaurs from Greek mythology, which is Chiron. Mm. And in the Chiron story, this is... some interesting parallels between that and the discovery of Chiron. So like I said, this business of classifying and reclassifying it a bunch of times. So there, right off the bat, there's some struggle over the identity. What is this thing? It's discovered at a time that Chiron is in Aries, and Aries is the stage of the zodiac, that it's the stage of life of establishing the identity, getting in touch with the identity, who am I, and going up to climb the mountain. So, fun and interesting little tie-ins kind of pile up with the Chiron story. Aries is the house of identity, struggle over identity. That's also in the Chiron myth, discovered at the time of Chiron and Aries. Now, also in the mythology, in the story, there's this struggle over identity. So Chiron is a centaur. Those are those beings that are half horse, half human. And in the Greek mythology, there is some interesting kind of, it looks to me like they wove together some psychological concepts into the story. And one of the ways this plays out is the centaurs being half horse, half human. It is this animal side of nature. It is this unrestrainable, uncontrollable, chaotic element that nature has that we see playing out in society. When things are at a lower vibrational state, you have these things like the belligerence and the warfare and the fighting and the, and the centaurs have a really bad reputation. because there's a lot of drunkenness, belligerence, warfare, warmongering. They're like out of control. So this is that chaotic, out of control element of society or of human nature or of that other side of nature. And Chiron is different from the other centaurs because he wants to vibrate higher. He is interested in philosophy and teaching and the arts and all different manner of arts and sciences. He's like, takes on learning a bunch of things and becomes a teacher. And he also becomes a talented healer. Now, so Chiron also has this struggle with identity. I'm half horse, I'm half human. What am I? You know, I don't fit in with the other centaurs. They're out of control and I want to vibrate higher. I've got another mission in life, another purpose. I'm not, you know, don't want to take part in that. Also, when we go back to the origin story for Chiron, so Kronos and Philyra. So Kronos was Saturn in the Roman, Kronos to the Greeks. Kronos has this rendezvous with the nymph Philyra. And at the time that they had this rendezvous, they had both taken on the form of horse. And so when Philyra gives birth to Chiron, she gives birth to a centaur, half horse, half human. She rejects her own son. The centaurs have this really bad reputation. I didn't want to give birth to a centaur. What is this thing? It's a monster. I want nothing to do with this. So right off the bat, Chiron is rejected by his own mother. There's that wound with identity again. And then also as he grows and develops, doesn't fit in with the other centaurs. He's vibrating at a different level. So again, this struggle and this difficulty over identity again, mirrored in the discovery of Chiron with the astronomers reclassifying and reclassifying this thing. What is this thing? You know, all these struggles with identity with the Chiron story. It's an interesting feature about it. So anyhow, moving along with this narrative, eventually what happens is there is a war that breaks out and the centaurs are involved and Chiron says, I want nothing to do with this. I'm not taking sides. I'm not taking part. Leave me out of it. I've got my teaching arts and my healing arts and I've got these other things I do in the warfare and the fighting. I want nothing to do with it. And a poison arrow that was not even meant for him strikes him. And Chiron is the most talented of the healers, but this becomes the wound that he could not heal. And so this is where we get this wounded healer side of the story. He, as talented as he is in the healing arts, he could not heal his own wound. But also there is some other psychological components going on in this story, which is, okay, this poison arrow was not meant for Chiron, but he got struck by it. And this is where the astrologers picked up on the story. This opened up a place in the dialogue and in the conversation for discussion of those things that happen to us in life that are unfair, that were not meant specifically for us. There's like a collective and a societal aspect to it. Those unfair, difficult things that it's just part of the way that life was and it's part of the things that happened to you and you just kind of had to accept it and get on with things. Wasn't your fault, wasn't that person's fault. It's just the way that things are and the way that things played out, the way that things happened. So this opened up a space in the conversation for discussing some of those things, those areas in life where we were wounded. And in the astrology, it's usually a wound that you picked up early in life, kind of a deep wound, something you carried with you over a long period of time that you're trying to figure out how to work with, how to do the dance with the rhythm and harmony in life, in spite of the fact that you're kind of carrying this wound. And this wound has some of this kind of collective and societal nature to it. Those unfair things about society or about the collective that just kind of happen to people and it's not that person's fault. It's just what happened in the way that it is. So that's a bit of the background on discovery of Chiron, some of the interesting tie-ins and synchronicities that it has with the myth, and then also where the astrologers picked up the conversation. And there's some other directions it's taken since then. We can get into some of more of that as we discuss if it comes up again or whatever, but that's some of the background on the story.
I do have some questions for you before we deep dive more. I know you have a series that you do with different guests and you call it Chironversation. Can you tell us a bit about how that started, what got you interested in that, and like what kind of things you guys have talked about on these shows that you've done?
Yeah, excellent. So there were two times when my studies in astrology took a turning point towards getting more serious and buckling down and actually starting to take it serious. So I had a long time interest in astrology going back years and years, but not something I was taking too serious, doing it in a casual way, and always liked it and was engaged by it, but wasn't taking it too serious. And the two things that caused like a turning point. And since that time, I started doing a lot of coursework, doing a lot more study, a lot of study of my natal chart and trying to really learn all of the basic techniques. And what does it take to really master readings of a natal chart? And how do you do all these things? And so the two things that kind of caused the turning point, the first one was learning about the my ascendant sign and the relationship that has to the order of the houses in my natal chart and in a person's natal chart. So the ascendant and the order of the houses are related topics. That was one thing when I stopped and took pause and said, whoa, this is starting to get a bit serious. This is really impactful information. I'm starting to take this more seriously. I got to do more with studies in astrology. This is, you know, there was some momentum picking up and I got really excited about it. I need to do more with this. So that was one thing. The second thing was when I started looking at this topic of Chiron, which I had never heard of for a long time. And when I discovered this topic of Chiron in astrology, Chiron had gone back into Aries. And when I went to read my natal chart, I have Chiron and Aries in my natal chart. And Chiron was discovered at a time when Chiron was in Aries. So there was some really interesting things that, you know, kind of started [S2] Nice. [S1] To unfold and spill out of this topic. But one of the other things that happened there was in learning how to read my natal chart, there were some areas of activity that were really significant that I was looking at, but I'd never perceived them as being connected to each other. And when I started investigating the Chiron topic and learning how to interpret that from the natal chart, it connected a bunch of different areas on my natal chart together. And there was this whole story going on in the background that emerged up to the surface. And I said, oh my God, I did not realize the connection between these things before. This Chiron topic brought it out. So I got so excited with this Chiron story that was when I started to actually take my studies in astrology into the public domain and communicate with other people about it. And so, yeah, I have an interview series going on my channel where I've been doing these things that I call Chironversations. Some of them, I have other astrologers join in to discuss the Chiron topic in astrology in general with me. And then there's some other ones where people come on to discuss some of these features that Chiron represents. So like areas in your life of like wounding and healing and what you had to do to, you know, strive forward and overcome in spite of the fact that you were wounded somewhere in your life. So all of these things together, because it's Chiron and conversations, I call them Chironversations, and that's the interview series that I've been doing with that. And a lot of variety has come out of it. It surprised me what came out of it. And that's what I was hoping for, you know, put myself on a little adventure. And it went beyond the expectations I had when I set out first doing the thing. And I had pretty high expectations when I started it, but it blew that open even more. And I was just wow, this is pretty amazing. So it's been a fun, exciting adventure doing that.
That's awesome. Brandon?
Yeah, I think that it's crazy how you don't know where things are going to go. Well, first of all, I love it because it's like a pun kind of. So, I mean, we all know how I feel about puns. And so that's what, and I learned about Chiron through watching Michael Tesserion, and he had, and what was her name? Fiona Edgar was on there. I think that's her name. And she was talking about this. And it really piqued my interest because at the time I was, quote unquote, healing myself or just, you know, working on myself. And I thought about this concept of the wounded healer. And I felt like I had been wounded in the past. And now going forward, not only was I healing myself, but I wanted to get to a place where I can help others heal themselves as well, using my example or even speaking to me or listening to my shows and all that stuff. So I really resonate with this topic of the wounded healer. And I feel like a lot of people that are in our community, I guess you could say, that are into this stuff also resonate with this. So I think it's very important. And I also like how it's synchronistic. They discovered it in 1977. And I was born in 1976, so I wonder if my wounding corresponded with the discovery of this. You know, that's pretty interesting.
Could it be?
Yeah. What do you think?
So, something that I've been seeing is when Chiron went back into Aries, so it discovered at the time of Chiron in Aries, when it went back into Chiron in Aries, a lot of conversations in the internet space opened up about Chiron and Aries again. And that was one of the things that made me catch onto it was like, what is all this chatter about, you know? And then it's like, oh, it's because Chiron went back into Aries. That's why you're hearing all this stuff about Chiron and Aries. And then, so that's where I got started with it. I just totally lost my train of thought. What was I saying? the chatter on the internet. Since then, been hearing a lot of people talk about, and this is what I find really interesting, is people having conversations about things that, with my orientation towards astrology, I perceive as totally astrological based concepts, but people talking outside of astrology, not talking about astrology, but talking about the same themes and issues. And so the way that I interpret those things is, okay, the timing is right for people's attention to have been directed back towards these things that are representative of Chiron and Aries, which has to do with issues of identity and a bunch of other subtopics that are related to that. But I've been seeing an increase in activity and discussion surrounding these topics. But this is not just people in astrology. This is people in all different areas of interest, some energy surrounding some of these topics. And I'm like, oh, this is totally, of course, I always do that. You know, if you're an astrologer, you always interpret everything in terms of the things that you see in astrology. But I'm like, oh, this is total Chiron and Aries stuff going on again, you know.
That's crazy. I have a couple of comments and maybe a question for you. So the first time I ever heard the word Chiron actually was through a friend, a childhood friend of mine. And it was probably a good 10 years ago. And she had kind of picked this like pen name for herself, sort of, and she used it as on her social media, that so her pen name became Chiron, but she spelled it differently, just to make it put a twist on it. But that's the first time I ever heard of Chiron. And someone, she explained it to me a little bit, and she said something about the wounded healer. But I never, like, beyond that, I knew nothing. Like, I knew nothing about it until Ashley Lanice, we had the show with her, and she talked about, and Brandon wanted to know about Chiron. So we talked a little bit about it then. So that's the first time I ever heard that. Because I don't think I even knew about the, was it Greek mythology or?
Yeah, it's from the Greek mythology.
Okay. Yeah.
I've been seeing that just like, a lot of resurgence of energy surrounding this topic, a lot more conversations happening around this topic.
Interesting.
Come up in recent years. And it's basically been since Chiron went back into Aries that I've seen a big uptick in these conversations. Of course, it's also because I'm paying more attention and noticing it, because, you know, it showed up on my radar and got into, you know, I became interested, but also a bit more energy surrounding the topic, you know.
So speaking of
I was just going to say, when did it come back in?
That's what I was going to ask.
It went back into Aries sometime in 2016.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
It's still going to be there for a few more years into the future until I got the date somewhere. I could look them up, but I think it's 2025.
Oh.
But don't quote me on that, because I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
What is its transit time? Like, does it go in one and then come out into another and then like,
yeah.
How does it transit?
All right. So it's actually got this really weird erratic orbit. It goes out as far as Uranus, but it comes in as close as Saturn. And its orbit is described as eccentric. And it doesn't spend an equal amount of time at each sign, because its orbit is so elongated and stretched out.
Okay.
So for it to do a full cycle is about 50 years. So wherever it was in your natal chart at the time that you were born, it's around age 50 that it returns to the same spot, or where you have a return, as they call it, you know.
Oh,
but it doesn't spend an equal amount of time in each of the signs because the orbit is so erratic and elongated, you know. So there's some signs where it spends longer. Aries is one of them. It spends a long time in Aries, but then shorter time at some of the other signs. Like, I think Pisces is one of the shortest ones.
But it's consistently short in Pisces or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's consistently short and long in the signs that it's short and long, roughly. Okay. But, you know, there's another interesting thing about that orbit also. So, as I said, it goes out as far as Uranus and it comes in as close as Saturn. But this is a really interesting place in astrology, because there's sort of like this two different domains that are represented by Saturn and by Uranus. And Saturn represents our relationship with authority and hierarchy. And it also has an energy that is kind of suppressive. It slows things down. There's some karmic lessons that are associated with Saturn. Saturn, the Saturnian path, is the one that says you have to take the long, steady, patient path. And you got to climb the ladder of success, taking one step at a time, doing things the right way. So it's following the rules, following the traditions. It's your relationship with hierarchy and authority. There's some karmic lessons that are associated with it. And it's that old fashioned advice that says you've got to study hard, you've got to work hard, you got to put your nose to the grindstone, and you got to do things the right way, one step at a time. Now, at the end of this process is like maturity and wisdom. So you get some gifts and blessings at the end of it. But it's also that thing of, you know, it's a difficult path. Things get serious. Things get a little bit heavy. They get difficult. And it's that thing where it's like, oh, I've got to stay on the path and I've got to stick with it to get there. That's the Saturnian path. Now, Saturn is also kind of like master of this 3D reality realm, of like this earthly realm. Uranus is out into the spiritual domain. And Uranus is all about breaking old paradigms and busting through. And it's all about freedom and individuality, being a nonconformist, daring to stand out and be different from the crowd, marching to the beat of a different drummer. So Chiron going in between Uranus and Saturn, I've heard a couple different astrologers interpret this as sort of like, it is bridging a gap between these two different domains. Actually, the astrologer Robert Phoenix said it is representative of the dance that we're doing in life in between these two different domains. On the one side, I've got to work hard. I've got to study hard. I've got to follow the rules. You know, you got to get the right degree. You got to get the right job. You got to marry the right person. You got to hit the gym, and you follow the right steps, and you get material rewards in life. But then on the other side, you're also being pulled to the other side where you're like, you know what? I want to break out of the box. I want to be different. I want to march to the beat of a different drummer. What about my individuality? What about my freedom streak? You know, like, so at various times in our life, we're kind of leaning towards one side and leaning back towards the other again. And there's this dance that we're doing in life, this rhythm in between these two different domains, you know, significant energy happening at two different ends of the spectrum. And we're doing the dance in the middle, trying to find the rhythm and the harmony, you know, in between. And there's a lot of topics like this in astrology where you've kind of got like a spectrum and two things at either side, and we're kind of in the middle dancing in between. But Chiron is a really interesting place in this story. You know, this orbit out as far as Uranus, in as close as Saturn. On the one side, authority and hierarchy and following the rules and traditions. On the other side, I want to break out of the box. I want to be different. I want to break the mold. And, you know, Uranus, it's all about breaking the old paradigms and finding new and different ways of doing things. You know, freedom, marching to the beat of a different drummer. And Chiron kind of represents, and also the Chiron wounds and the way that you heal from them also kind of plays out through some of these themes. You know, you're doing this dance in between these two different domains.
Awesome.
Yeah, I love that, because I feel life really is a balance. And people could get stuck on one side of it or the other, and this is kind of just trying to remind you with its placement that it's about both. It's about following the rules and then sometimes going your own way, you know.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah, really cool. I was just gonna say, I went back to look at what Ashley Olney said about where we were, and Brandon and I are Taurus. Our Chiron is in Taurus.
Chiron and Taurus generation.
Yeah. I don't know if you have any comments about that.
Chiron and Taurus. So I actually find two things really interesting. So there's a planet, you know, it's not a planet, but planets, different bodies in the solar system, different orbs, you know, sun, moon, planets, all of this. So planets in the signs, and then there's also planets in the houses. And both of these topics, when you bring them together, that's when you get a really full picture of what's going on, but some interesting things there. But what does Taurus represent? Taurus is fixed earth, and Taurus is about stability. So earth, that's being grounded in the real practical, pragmatic concerns of earthly life. You know, the real here and now, what's really happening here. And Taurus is fixed earth. So it's searching for stability. How do we sustain? How do we maintain things in life? And with Taurus, it's about values and resources. So how do you get your money? How do you put food on the table? Those types of concerns. And Taurus is on a slow, steady, patient path. Slow moving. You know, Taurus is the bull plowing the field, is the symbolism. You got to work hard. You got to put some muscle behind it. But also often being described as slow, but you know, when it comes down to it, if you look at tortoise versus the hare, it's the tortoise who wins the race. So there's nothing wrong with being on a slow, steady, patient path. So the Chiron wounding could indicate, you know, areas in your life where you are learning life lessons that have to do with those areas. When you've got Chiron in a sign, sometimes it takes on some of the qualities of that sign. So there could be some energy of things being a bit slowed down on the slow, steady path. Could also be issues that have to do with things like how you get your money, how you put food on the table, your values and resources. Another thing with Taurus is ruled by the planet Venus, which has to do with our, that's the love principle and the romance principle. So love, romantic relationships, and our appreciation of the sensuous and beautiful side of life, but also the way that we seek harmony and balance in life has to do with Venus, and Venus is the ruler of Taurus. So that's another area where you could see Chiron wounds playing out when you have Chiron and Taurus, or things that the person is working on in their life. Sometimes it's like life lessons that that show up that, you know, now your task is working through this, and then you get another one. Now your task is to work through this lesson. Some of those lessons could be reflective of some of those domains if we're talking about Chiron and Taurus.
Cool. So, Brandon, did you have any other topics or questions?
Not really in that area. I just like the analogy of the tortoise and the hare. And it's crazy how we're so steeped in this, in these stories that we grow up in, or we grow up with. And it's, you know, if we just pay a little more attention, there's a reason why these stories hang around so much and they're just repeated all the time. And it's such a valuable thing to realize that, yeah, the tortoise did win the race. Maybe he took longer, but there was a reason why he took longer. He had more stuff to do or whatever it was. He got more accomplished and he didn't just run really fast and then take a quick nap. And then all of a sudden he lost the race, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Slow and steady wins the race.
That's got to be one of the great stories. I mean,
yeah.
It's so fitting. There's so many situations when I find myself repeating that phrase. I'm like, well, tortoise versus the hare. You know, I'm like, oh, I just said it again. But it's so useful, you know.
Yeah.
It illustrates so well that concept, those applying that steadiness and that patience and how that can benefit you, you know.
And yeah. Something that everybody understands and everybody gets in this culture, which is great too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Davin, you wanted to dive deeper into some of these other topics that you mentioned earlier. Take us somewhere deep.
Okay. So, interesting thing. I had a kind of turning point with this Chiron topic recently. And in one of the Chiron versations that I did, I had contacted the astrologer, Tom Jacobs, and the work that I, so when I was, when I first came across this topic and was first learning about it and looking at my natal chart and learning about it, I came across his work and I was also looking at a bunch of other sources, but his work really stood apart for me. It just like, it seemed to go deeper and there was just so much going on. And I just thought the quality of the work was so excellent that he was doing. And I just, one day I just sat down and I was like, well, of course he's going to say no, but I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to send him an email and see if he wants to sit down and, do an interview with me. And then like, after all of that worrying and fretting that, like, you know, should I send the email? No, I'm not going to do it. He's just going to say no. And then he just said yes. And he was totally nice and sat down and like, we had this excellent interview. So amazing. I was like, okay, you know, what was all of that fretting and worrying about? I should have just, you know,
exactly.
Impulse strikes, you just go ahead and do it. What's the worst that's going to happen? Maybe they say I'm too busy. Maybe they say whatever else. It's no big deal.
Right.
You know, just so anyhow.
It's that self-defeating, not to cut you off, but it's that self-defeating voice that we have inside. Right. You know, it's like, don't listen to that voice, because if it was externalized and there was a person next to you saying those things, everybody else would think that person was crazy. So don't treat yourself like a crazy person, right?
Yeah, they would see how crazy that person really is.
Yeah,
like, you could externalize it and then see what the guy looks like. And it's like, he's wearing shabby clothes. He hasn't showered. It's like, that guy's a mess. What are you listening to that guy for? You know, like... Are you nuts? So I got his book on the topic. I actually recently did a video about this as well, about some thoughts I had on the book. I did a little book review, and also how this kind of came to be a turning point for me on the topic. And he's also got a course on it, which I want to take soon. I'm excited about that. So anyhow, looking at the work of Tom Jacobs, his work really stood apart for me, just the quality of it and also the depth of it. And he confronts this topic of wounding and healing and these concepts we have about the wounded healer. And as he points out in the book, he's got like 0 degree Uranus in the first house. So it's there right there conjunct on his ascendant. And if you don't speak astrology to translate that for you, he's a rebel. He's here to do things differently. He's here to break the old paradigms. There's a different way to do things, and I'm going to show us how. And doesn't like to be boxed into patterns that are old, stagnant, stale, and haven't been, busted apart for a while. Uranus energy is stepping in, and it's like, hey, we got to bust this open and we got to break new ground. So he does that with the Chiron topic and with these concepts about healing and wounding that we have. So a little bit of a background on that. This takes us again to some of the background on the Chiron story and where it entered into astrology as well. And he pointed this out in the interview that I did with him, and it's also in the book in the introductory chapters. He points out that at the time that Chiron was discovered, the first astrologers to step in and do the first work on the topic were of the Pluto and Leo generation. And not to disparage the work that they did, he points out, and I'm pointing out as well, and there was some excellent work that took place there. You know, they laid down some really good groundwork, not taking away from that, but this did form sort of like a paradigm that then kind of stayed in place. And it's kind of been that way ever since. And he's saying, hey, it's time to progress forward with this topic. You know, this paradigm has been around for a long time, not taking away from that early work that they laid out. There's good stuff there, but what about taking things to the next level? And what he's talking about there with this Pluto and Leo generation. So, you know, Leo has to do with the personality, the persona. It's also the ego. And the Pluto and Leo generation was putting out a lot of work that was working in the world of psychology and transforming the ego and the personality. And this is where you got like the self-help books and the success literature and the transforming yourself and doing the self-help work and the success literature, you know, changing your positive state of mind to be geared for success and for your interpersonal relationships. This is all excellent, great work. You know, go study it. Excellent stuff happening there. But this also kind of formed the paradigm with how the astrologers were working with the Chiron topic. And what he was pointing out is that a lot of the work that was being done in the early stages of this Chiron topic, Pluto and Leo generation working on this, was taking place in the realm of the psychological and the ego and the personality. And he said, what about taking things to the next level? That takes us around to the work that he did with Chiron. So when he started working with Chiron, he was actually working on a different topic. We were approaching 2012, and he was doing channeling work and looking into what does this represent. It's the end of the long count Mayan calendar, but what is this change that is indicated with this calendar ending at 2012? What is this about? Doing some channeling work, and the transmissions and the information that came through said that there is going to be a great shift here, but it's not going to take place in the physical world. This is going to be an energetic shift. This is it's going to be changes and shifts in consciousness. It's going to take place in the energetic realm. We are energetic beings, and we have energy exchanges with each other, and there is this whole energetic world. So the changes that are indicated by this end at 2012, they're not talking about changes you're going to see in the physical world. It's happening in the energetic and in the consciousness level is where it's going to take place. And also part of the information that came through in this transmission said that Chiron is going to be an important topic in understanding these energetic shifts that are happening. So that directed him towards beginning the work that he did in Chiron, and he went really... he did a lot of work on the topic of Chiron in astrology. And I think people really need to check out the work he's doing, because it did break open some new ground, I think. And I think he's accelerating the topic. I mean, but anyhow, what is different about the work that he's doing compared to the work that came before with this topic of Chiron and astrology? One of it has to do with this orientation that he's talking about of focusing on the energetic side of things, as opposed to staying in that realm of like the psychological and the identity and the ego and on that side of things. Yeah, there's great conversations happening there. There's great work that's been done there. Not to take away from that, but there's a lot more going on. You know, we are energetic beings, and there is this energy exchange that takes place in our relationships with people there is this give and take happening. And we influence and we affect each other, even in just like little minor interactions with each other. There is like this back and forth exchange of energy happening. And where he took the topic of Chiron is that Chiron is in, he compared it to an energetic antenna and an energetic sensitizer. So the place where Chiron appears in your natal chart indicates an area in your life where you have special receptivity and sensitivity. You're really tuned into the energetic exchanges that are happening there. Because of that, you're also hypersensitive in that area. There is the tendency to get easily hurt or injured or offended because you are so sensitive to what happens in that area. It's also the area where that wound occurred. So you're hypersensitive surrounding this issue, but it's also a place where you're going to be doing some work and transforming these things, and where you've got a place where you can make some real progress and some growth in that area because you are so tuned in and plugged in that area. So in the work he's doing, it's all about that energetic exchange. Now, another important thing that's different about the work that he's doing compared to some of the previous work on the Chiron topic is his discussions of what is the role of the healer? What is going on here with this concept of like wounding, being wounded and being a healer? What is a healer? What about talking about that? And where he took that conversation kind of goes like this. So, he said, there's like stages that you go through in this process. In the stage where you're wounded, you're starting to have an increase in awareness of things that took place, things that happened. You're starting to process it. Like, you know, I'm starting to realize maybe you were suppressing it before and it's the information starting to come back up. And now you're starting to tune in and pay a bit more attention. You're starting to process and work through it, but there's a tendency there to be kind of like in a victim kind of state of mind. You know, oh, I'm wounded and these things happened to me. There's a stage where you transcend beyond that, which takes you to the next stage, which is the wounded healer stage. Now you say, okay, I've gotten past that victim mindset. Now I want to go out and I want to help other people heal. And I want to bring these things that I learned to other people and help them through the process as well. This is a stage, not that there's not important work going on here. He actually does healing work. Points out that healers are doing incredible work. And yes, healing work is great. Healers are doing incredibly important work, but there is also a stage that you want to get beyond this as well. And this is the reason why. When you are in that wounded healer stage, you are still in a process of being identified with the wound. You're still identifying with the wound. You're still kind of there. And so how do you then take things to the next level? So this takes us around to a conversation of what is actually happening when a person heals. And doing healing work with his clients, he kind of pointed this out. He said, you know, a person can't heal unless they're actually taking steps to heal themselves. They actually have to do the work. They have to generate it from within, and they have to actually take steps forward and to start to heal themselves. That's actually where the healing comes from. You have to heal yourself. You have to do it yourself. And what the healer is doing, it's not healing coming from outside. They might be holding space. They might be facilitating. They might be helping you along in the direction towards getting some new tools or taking some steps in the right direction. But what they're really doing is facilitating and holding a space for you while you figure out that like, oh, I've got to do this myself. I've got to heal myself. So that takes us to the next stage. It goes beyond the wounded healer. Wounded healer, you're still kind of identifying with the wound. You want to also get past that stage. And what stage comes after that? And the stage that comes after that is getting in touch with your uniqueness as an individual. Nobody else is exactly like you. You are totally a unique individual person. And getting in touch with that, you start to realize that some of these wounds that you have, some of these things that made you different are actually gifts that you have. And these are gifts that the world is waiting to receive. So you can get in touch with that and bring this stuff out in a positive way, get the energy flowing surrounding that. And that can take you to a place where you are no longer caught up in identifying with the wound or with being wounded or being in the process of dealing with wounds. You're now taking things outwards, getting in touch with your uniqueness, the gifts that you have to offer and to bring to the world. And also the other thing that it does is it gives you some wisdom and some clarity where you can see different stages that other people are at and kind of respect the space and the time that they are at. You know, you're not there to heal everybody. You're not there to fix all of the things at once. They've got to go through that process themselves. And you're giving them the space and the ability to do that, but also getting in touch with that uniqueness. You can see what makes that person unique and different. Those things that they have going on in those areas of life, that it's also a gift that they have. It's also what makes them unique and different, you know. So those are some ways that the work of Tom Jacobs is kind of laying out some new groundwork where we're taking these topics of Chiron in astrology.
Yeah, I love that. Also, because that's a common theme that we keep hitting on here in the Oversharon Show. It's about, you know, we're not here to heal anybody else. We're just here to heal ourselves. And then we can maybe help people help themselves along the way. And I was also thinking about the story of Chiron, how he was killed by an arrow, even though he wasn't involved in the war. And it kind of reminds me, it's like the Bhagavad Gita, you know, because people like us always say we're just going to step away from society and we're not going to deal with all that stuff. But I think at some point, if there is a split or something's going on, or there's a war, not maybe an actual war, but if we're using it as an allegory, there you do kind of have to at some point pick a side that you're going to be on. And again, it's not like a real war, just maybe a war within a spiritual war, because those arrows are going to be slung no matter what. If all of humanity is going to war, you're still a part of humanity. You're still part of the collective consciousness. So sometimes you have to metaphorically pick a side. And again, I like to just use these topics of war as like a war within, but you have to pick a side and you actually have to do the work. And if you're just standing in the middle trying to mediate or help and heal everybody else, then you might get hit with one of these arrows that wasn't even intended for you and it wasn't anyone's intention, but just, you know, wrong place, wrong time, and that's what's going to happen. And I feel like that's what is happening right now. We're seeing kind of a split in consciousness. Some people are spiraling upwards. Some people are spiraling down. So I would say go ahead and spiral up. You don't have to feel bad about it. You don't have to feel bad if there's people around you who don't see it. You can't fix the world. You can't stop the war or the split or whatever it is. There's nothing you could do. It's not up to you to do that. It's a function of this realm, or maybe it's something God's doing, however you look at it in your, you know, with your own cosmology. So yeah, it's really just like Krishna said to Arjuna when Arjuna didn't want to fight the battle. He's like, you know, but you're a warrior. So for you to not fight a battle, it's the most disgraceful thing that you can do, especially if it's a righteous battle. And I feel like, again, not that it's a war, but there's a war within and it is a righteous battle. And it is up to you yourself to fight that war, because if not, you could still get hit with a stray arrow. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's
that coming. Those are such excellent points. And also, I really like the way that you expressed it as well. But also this concept of there being different levels to this kind of operating simultaneously. You know, so there's the war happening in that story in the Bhagavad Gita, but then there's also the metaphorical and the spiritual components to it. And these are different levels operating simultaneously. And, you know, the war being described in the Bhagavad Gita is just a platform for describing some of these other elements taking place in there. And there's actually a really interesting passage in this book and one of the intro chapters that I kind of want to read from, because it really intersects with some of those themes that you brought up along the way in what you just said as well. So these shifts in consciousness, and guess what? One way or another, it's there. And maybe picking sides isn't the best terminology, but there's something going on where it's like there are these energetic shifts happening. You are headed in a certain direction. You want to make wise choices about where you're heading, how you're going to manage these shifts in energy. They're taking place within you. They're taking place in the world. It's on multiple levels these things are taking place. So how are you stepping forward into these things? How are you managing the dance that you're doing with these things? And so this is tied in with some of these concepts that he discussed where he was doing this work with the Mayan lung count calendar and what's up with this thing of 2012, what does this represent, you know? And, you know, as I said, he's going with the interpretation of shifts in consciousness, shifts in energy, not things you're seeing in the physical world, things taking place in the world of consciousness and in the energetic world. So getting back to where we are now relative to 2012 and all these opportunities to shift and experience ourselves as energetic beings, what we're looking at now is a divergence in levels of consciousness. Those of us who go down the path, who respond to the invitations to learn about our history and how we created the world around us, how we have created our own worlds around us. That's going to be one level of consciousness where we open and adapt to this view of seeing ourselves as spiritual creators creating all of this. The other level of consciousness for those people who do not choose to change in the way that you do, the way that others do, things will seem to stay the same, but get more intense. The same themes, the same patterns, the same issues, but more intense, perhaps probably faster. The ways that problems can manifest in the material plane will become faster because the same way that the ways that we can solve and heal and release these and understand this new perspective, this higher view, this bird's eye view, this bird's eye perspective, this higher perspective on ourselves as spiritual beings is also increasing in speed. So divergent levels of consciousness, those of you who go through this process of change will find yourselves speaking a different language. You'll find yourself using language, not just a different vocabulary, but using language in a very intentional way, in a very different way that actually brings through the energy of yourself as a divine creative being. And I found that so interesting. For one thing, it connects with some of those themes that you just discussed. So I made me excited. I'm like, oh, I got something. I got to read this. I've been reading this passage for some other things. Comes up again. I got all excited on that level. But also, when I started doing some work with the Chiron topic, I went through some of these before I read this book. This is long before I read this book. I went through some of this process of working with language, and that actually led me around to doing an interview with the author, Danny Katz, and she does a lot of work in the ways that we use language and the relationship that that has with thought, mind, and consciousness. But also thought, mind, and consciousness, the way that we interact with reality, there's a relationship there between that and the way that we use language as well. So I actually did an interview with her, and the morning that I went to interview her, I went to a coffee shop to sit down and drink a cup of green tea and just hang out and read a book and relax. I didn't have to work that day, got an interview coming up later. And that was the passage that I sat down to read at the coffee shop while I'm drinking the tea. I was like, oh my God, I'm interviewing Danny Katz today. And then I read that, it was a cool yeah, synchronicity.
It's funny awesome. How the way this realm works. And I love how your face lighted up when I said what I said, because that happened. If people aren't familiar, I recorded a show with Davin on his channel. You can go check it out. And I think that's why these conversations, these Chiron conversations, are so important, because while we're having these conversations, we're also making discoveries and putting things together because we have three different minds at work here. It's a trinity of ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to mention, I saw that you posted that Danny Katz interview that you did, that Chiron-versation, and I meant to watch and I still haven't watched it, but I feel like that's a pen name. Is that a pen name for her?
Danny Katz?
Yeah. Or is that her real name?
I was under the impression that's her real name. I don't know for sure.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Because they're both like real names, or they're both common names. So I just assumed it was her real name.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe somewhere in the chats that we're in, I got this feeling that someone was saying, great job on that video, or not that one, but on a video that had that name in it. And it was sending it to someone else who did not have the name Danny Katz. So I was like, is that the same person? So I don't know. Maybe I was confused.
She does have a different name in Telegram.
Oh, okay. That's probably what it was.
So the channel is still under her name, which is Danny Katz.
Okay.
But when she writes to people, like how you can have your little user handle, your little username.
Yeah.
It's Liminal Babe.
Oh, is it?
Okay. So, liminal, mind, liminal consciousness.
Okay.
So she's the consciousness babe, or she's the liminal babe. So she's liminal babe. And then she's also Danny Katz.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's probably where I got mixed up. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Awesome. So do you have any other deep dives that you wanted to do with Chiron? Was there anything else, Brendan, that you wanted to ask?
Well, I guess I can add to what he was saying. I did want to say something about 2012, because so we've got onto the work of this guy named Jason Brashears from Archaics, and he wrote a book about how before 2012, he was trying to tell everybody, like, this isn't what you think it is. The calendars are wrong. This isn't the time they're pointing to. But so maybe you could say, oh, it wasn't really 2012 or whatever. But what I like think is really important is I don't think things happen by mistake. So the fact that everybody pointed, or whoever it was that misappropriated or pointed this Mayan law count to 2012, I think it was still to try to point something out. And I think it was that this shift in consciousness that was going to occur. And with the shift in consciousness, like I said, you're going to have people go up and down. And I know 2012 was a very pivotal year for me. That's the year that I really started getting involved in a lot of different stuff. For instance, I started my morelawsmoreproblems.com blog, which you could still go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. And I started that in January of 2013. But in 2012, I started all the preparation work for things like that. I got stuff in my life. I started to get together. Like, I always wanted to get my pistol permit, and I ended up doing that in 2012, and just other things. I had a relationship that came to an end that I was dating this woman, and it just didn't seem exactly right for where I wanted to be. I still had a lot of, I guess you could say, healing or work to do on myself because of my severe intimacy issues. So 2012 was really when things started to change. So I was just going to ask, is there anything that you could remember from back then? Did you get like a kick in the boot from the universe around that time or anything, Davin?
I did, but that also happens to me all the time because I'm an ascendant Scorpio. So go through a lot of these deep transformation, death and rebirth processes. You get a whole bunch of them when you're ascendant Scorpio. It's like gifts from the universe, but they're difficult ones. So you're like, oh, thanks, another one. And it's like, you get another one of these gifts again. And so, yeah, I've been through it a bunch of times. But also, I'm interested, and this is something I don't know anything about. I don't even know, you know, what languages were being spoke, or how did people work out what was going on with this Mayan calendar and the Mayan culture and what was going on there? I don't know the details of that and where this information comes from, but I would like to know, like, I kind of suspect that somewhere that's part of the original story is indicating some kind of shift. And ever since then, people have been interpreting it in a whole bunch of different ways. And everybody's saying, like, no, I've got the correct answer. It's supposed to, they were talking about this. And then one guy's like, no, it's the actual end of the world. And the other guy's like, no, it's not. It's talking about a shift in consciousness. The other guy's like, no, it's not. It's the end of the cycle between, you know, the badger getting in the fight with the beaver, and it's going to save the thing. Everybody's got a different story about what's going on there, but that there was some kind of indication or talk that there's some kind of shift, there's some kind of change. And that makes sense to me because this calendar was cyclical and goes through a bunch of cycles, but then just comes to an end. So then I'm like, okay, there's, looks to me sort of like an obvious metaphor there. You know, there, when something ends, then it indicates that there's a new beginning, or, you know, a lot of different ways people are going to interpret these things, but it'd be interesting if we could somehow know what languages did they speak. Do we have actual records people can actually like sit down and read and find out what did they actually have to say for themselves about this topic? Like, there's so much information that's come out about this topic from so many different sources, and everybody's saying they got the right answer. I'm like, I would love to hear somebody who's done, like, you know, the real, or maybe somebody who's got experience and has done a lot of research. What, you know, is there more they could tell us about some of these questions, you know?
That's interesting that you say that, because we were just talking to Chance. We just had him on, and it'll be the episode prior to this one. And he was talking a lot about language and about timeframes and things like that, about especially also about allegory and how all these things are astrotheology and syncretism, and how they're more like cycles. And so, like, the story that's written is, it's about the heavens. It's about the sky clock. It's about, you know, loops and cycles and things coming to an end and coming back around again. So it's funny that you say that, because it's very, very related. But I was also going to point out that for me in 2012, that's funny, because that's when I also started the first blog I ever did was in 2012 as well. Was it? I think it was like 2011 or 2012. And then that's when my rockiest relationship started to as well in 2012. So lots of change there as well for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that too, because what you said just before that, it's so many different ways to interpret it. And I feel like we live in a time right now, even though we think we're so advanced and we have all this material stuff, but people take so much, so many things so literally.
Oh my God.
You know, and it's like, if you could see around that, then you could see that just like the Bhagavad Gita, maybe there was a war of the Kurukshetra, you know, like on that that plane or whatever, but it was also being used as an allegory because it makes people sit up and listen and perk their ears up because, oh, it's a story about a war. And then, that's, yeah. You know, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. It's just, no, it's no, something no. I struggle with all the time because there were times, different things I was doing when I was developing kind of like a multi-layered thinking process, a bunch of different things. I mean, there was a time when I used to be a school teacher and I used to teach math and in other areas as well, just different places where I was encouraged to exercise kind of like some multi-layered thinking. And I think something that I see is like, there's kind of the, you know, it's like we get trained from a young age to sit down in front of like A, B, C, and D and pick, and only one of them is the correct answer and pick the correct answer. And then this literal thinking mindset people get locked into, and it's like, you know, each person thinks they've got the real only one answer. And I'm like, there are multiple levels and layers of things happening all simultaneously. There's not one single answer, you know, like, yeah, I get frustrated with it sometimes, that mindset. And you see people having these crazy arguments with each other and getting upset and flinging mud. And I'm just like, you guys are going nuts over a total misconception. Like, you know, it's like semantics, like you're not appreciating the nuance that the other person in their language, and they're not appreciating yours. And you guys, if you guys could see, you're actually saying the same thing and don't even realize it while you're flinging mud at each other. It's like, it's like rampant.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's increasing. Like people are getting even more and more locked into this single-minded view on things and only one perception level of things and not appreciating the different layers of things and the simultaneity of it. It's like, it's something else.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think it has to do with the spiraling up and down, because I know there are people that aren't, big shout out to the Bear community, Owen Benjamin and stuff. I just went to a meetup and, you know, I'll be hanging around with Christians and I'll be hanging around with Muslims there. And then me, whatever the heck I am. And we're all getting along. We brought, you know, people brought food. We're just having a good time. There's kids there. We're having great conversations and nobody's really getting stuck in any of this literal stuff because they're starting to realize that there's more important things. And I really appreciate that, because this literal stuff, it goes back to division. It keeps people divided. They get attached to a symbol, and then they believe there's only one way, and this symbol is the way. And like what Chance was saying, all these symbols are just written in the sky, and people have interpreted them in the way that they want. And some people might have interpreted them in the way that they can use them as a control mechanism to control other people who allow themselves to be controlled, right? It's not that there's like a direct slavery going on like that. It's always a choice, we say. So yeah, I'm excited about
but
that.
I see it happening there too. So you've got these conversations about the, you know, the astrotheological, and then, well, I read the book by the guy who said that the yes. symbolism behind the thing did the thing. And then the people are arguing about that. And so they're still doing that literal thing. Like the answer, well, I just read the book by the guy and I think he's the top dog. So therefore, if you don't believe what I say, you're full of it. And they're going back and forth, and they're doing the same thing as the people they were trying to break away from with the literal stuff. And I'm just like, here we go again. And like, it just keeps going and going, you know, like you got to appreciate different layers and levels of things happening simultaneously. As true and as correct as your answer might be, it's not the only thing happening at the same time. There's other layers of things happening, and they're happening together at the same time. You know, the astrotheological is not the only thing happening either. That's one other layer piece, that yeah. tells us more about, yeah, another piece. It's another layer telling us another feature of the story, but it's also not the only thing and not the place to go to that has all of the answers and everything else has to be rejected. There's a bunch of other stuff going on as well.
It could be yeah. the way for that. It could be somebody's way that they found and that works for them, which is great. And that's what I always say, you know, there's many paths to one mountaintop. So if that works for that person, it's great. But it, the problem comes in when they're like, oh, this is the way now. This is the way you have to do it too. And yeah. I just see that as projection, or maybe, you know, people should ask themselves, well, why do I have to defend the truth? The truth doesn't need to be defended. You know, like if you're a Christian, you don't have to defend God or Jesus. Like they are going to take care of themselves just
apologists.
Fine. You know, which is great. And like I said, the Christians that I've been hanging out with lately, I think they get it. Maybe they don't put it in those exact words, but they know they're on some kind of truth that keeps them on the path where they need to go. And they don't need to tell anyone else what their path is, especially if they're living in accordance with the golden rule or natural law or God's law, or just in accordance with nature, we like to say, you know. Yeah.
Right. Something else that I thought of while you guys were talking about, like the 2012 thing and like why it could have happened and stuff, and why, like, could it be that the collective consciousness or whatever you want to call it, maybe manifested what was already being said, you know, oh, things are going to happen. Something's going to happen in 2012. So maybe certain things did happen because of the collective consciousness that was kind of directed in that way. Other things didn't happen because of that too.
Yeah. Or maybe even there's people aware of this shift. So they wanted a distraction and let people think it was going to be the end of the world and all this stuff. So then they would be distracted from the voice within this intuition. And that's basically what led me to do what I did, because I felt like stand-up comedy, for example, I started doing that in 2013. That's something that I always wanted to do, but it was that little voice in the back of my head stopping me. Well, then I started to tune into my intuition and I followed that. And then I just started doing stand-up comedy and I was like, F you, little voice in my head, I'm going to do this. And I did it. And the more I did it, the easier it got and the better it got. And that's really what led me to where I am today. I mean, everything did, but that was one of the major things because of the people I met, you know, the plant medicines I started to engage in and all this stuff. It really made me take a look at my life, which then resulted in me changing my behavior. So,
yeah.
And maybe
I think we're at the point now where it's pretty undeniable that major shifts in consciousness and energy have taken place. Now, exactly where and when and how, like, you know, yeah, it could be debate about that, but the fact that it's happened, it's, I mean, like, I don't see how anybody could deny that. Like, if you think of where we're at today compared to where we were at in 2012 and look at how different the world is since that time, and just go, the people you talk to, are you talking to the same people? Are you having the same type of conversations? I mean, like, everything is different. Like, shifts in consciousness, shifts in energy. Like, to me, I'm like, I think it's undeniable. I mean, exactly when and where, I don't, you know, I'll let the people who like to debate about that. But I think that it's happened is pretty undeniable. But that's just my two cents, my take. But I do have another thing I'd like to bring into the conversations to kind of wrap some things up with that conversation that we had about the wounding healing thing. Some of those ideas and topics that I introduced were different about what Tom Jacobs was doing with those concepts. And something that I think illustrates these things really well, this is that topic of the healing has to come from within. You've got to heal yourself.
Yeah.
And yes, healers are great and wonderful and they're doing incredible, important work, and let's continue that. But, you know, they're facilitating, they're holding a space where people can do that work of healing themselves. It's got to come from within. You've got to heal yourself. It's not going to come from outside, you know. But there was a conversation I had with my friend Reagan, and he's in one of the conversations in this interview series on my channel, if you were interested and wanted to see it. And this was just so powerful. I mean, his shared some of his life story, and it was really incredible, powerful stuff. I mean, it was just like, you know, kind of jaw dropping for me, in my opinion. It was just like incredible what he brought to the conversation, what he shared. But what was at the kernel of it, what was at the heart of the matter, was there was this process he was going through, this difficulty in connecting with people and to find out where and why and how. You'd hear it in the story that he tells in an interview or whatever. But there was this difficulty there, this energy blockage. There was this stuff going on surrounding this issue. We all need to connect with each other. We need to connect with people. It's a fundamental human need. We all have it. And having a difficulty or a blockage going on there, that's just such a difficult thing to be dealing with. And he's going through this process. And what he took away from it and what he said that he learned from this was that the love that he needed, and we all need love, this is a necessary fundamental human need. He was trying to get it from outside, and he had to first generate it from within. He had to generate it inside himself first in order to get it to flow with that back and forth with the love that he needed to get. And then it was like a flow that could go back and forth, and then it could start the process working. But he had to first generate it within. And I even put that in the description somewhere, or the title or something, you know, like the love that we need, could it be generated from within? Well, not only can it, but that might be a necessary part of the process. In fact, that is a necessary part of the process. You've got to generate it from inside yourself first in order to get it going and to work with that dynamic in life. Some people might go through some really difficult experiences in life in the learning process there, but there's lessons that all of us end up learning in that area of life, you know. So that was something I wanted to bring in to tie some things together with that.
Yeah. I love that you brought that in, because it really reminds me of my own journey, because prior I was in the world, in the crowd, surrounded by people. And then when I started to realize that I wanted to work on myself, I basically became a hermit, and I would do all the things. And I always had this idea in my head that I was going to be like maybe this monk at the top of a mountain or something, like just away from people. And I just couldn't deal with people and all this stuff. So I healed myself. And then my path brought me to connect with other people. So once I did some sort of work on myself, showed myself some self-love, then I came across other people who are like that. And then I was like, oh, wait, it's not all about just being alone and being this monk on the top of a mountaintop or whatever, being in isolation. It's about sharing that love in the correct, positive way with other people. And that's how we continue the healing, or I hate to say healing, you know, because it makes you seem like there's something wrong with you, but just continue this work that we're doing toward higher consciousness, I'll say, you know. So then, you know, I link up with Sharon, linked up with a bunch of other people. We're linking up with you. And now we kind of went through that time in our lives where we might have been isolated, but now it's like it's the time to come together, because there's a war. But is it a real war? No, it's an internal thing that people have to go through. But we're spiraling up. So we did technically kind of pick sides. And you're right, picking sides probably wasn't the best way to put it. But we are on the side of people who want to elevate their consciousness. Not that we want to hurt anyone else or do anything to them, but we just want to move forward to a different destination or path, because I think we realize even the people who spiral down, eventually they're going to come up. And when they do, then maybe they can look to work we did, or maybe just us elevating our consciousness. Even if we don't have any contact with them, maybe the way this realm works, it affects them in a good way. You know, just the fact that they know there's people out there that aren't in despair, whatever it is, you know. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That's perfect.
Excellent.
Yeah. And I feel like one of the main things we talk about on this channel is self-healing and healing yourself first, working on yourself, working on your past traumas and wounds, and being able to clear them in a healthy way so that you can effectively love others, because you can't love others if you can't love yourself first.
Yes,
right. So that's
yes.
That to me brings in the whole love thy neighbor as thyself, because how can you love your neighbor as thyself if you don't love thyself first, right? So, and then to me, I mean, I also see it as love God, love people, that whole concept too, like the biblical concept of love God, love people, because I see God as like when when they say the Holy Spirit is within you, even the Bible said, you know, 1 John 2:27 says you don't need another teacher because the Holy Spirit within you is your teacher. So like that's the Holy Spirit within you. So how do you love the Holy Spirit, which is equivalent to God, right? You know, how do you love God? How do you love the Holy Spirit? You love yourself because the Holy Spirit is within you. So love God, then you can love people. You can't do the other without doing the loving thyself, loving God first.
Yeah. And if you look at the love your neighbor as yourself and you just look at apophatically, like backwards, it's like, okay, love yourself And then you could love your neighbor. You have to let the love share. You can't just keep it all to yourself. You know, maybe some people, it's their path to go on a mountaintop somewhere or whatever. But for people like us, especially with these great voices and charming personalities, you know, we have to put them to use in a way where we can all come together. Because I feel like once we come back together, you know, it's kind of like salmon, right? They spawn in a river somewhere, then they swim out to the sea and they're by themselves. And then they have to come back together to elevate to the next level. So that's basically what we're doing right now. You know, we're building these communities and we're all just kind of elevating our consciousness.
Yeah. And this kind of takes us back around again to that point that I said that Tom Jacobs was making, that in this three-step process, at that end of the process, or that third step that he was talking about, breaking from the old paradigm, what comes next? Getting in touch with your uniqueness as an individual. Well, you've got to forgive yourself. You've got to get in touch with that. Find that, you know, that spirit within, and you've actually got gifts that the world is waiting to receive. They're sitting waiting for you to bring it out. And if you are caught up in this other state of things, like you're not forgiving yourself, you're beating yourself up, you've got this negative spiral inwards, the whole world is just sitting there like, oh man, we're waiting. You know, you've got these gifts inside. We're waiting for you to share these gifts with us. If you can work through this process and get in touch with that stuff and bring it out, then suddenly the world is like, hey, there we go. That's what we were waiting for. We were waiting for you to share your unique gifts with us. We were here waiting to receive it. And, you know, it's everybody's got it. The world is waiting to receive it, you know?
Yeah. And if you just look at our story with Sharon and I and then meeting you, it was the same thing. We found somebody who was vibrating at the same frequency and we decided to talk to you. And if we didn't, say we were like, I don't know, you know, whatever. But we took that step, we connected with you, and now we're breaking all this new ground and breaking through ideas and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah, been a lot of fun.
The world was waiting for us. We're here, guys. So go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Excellent segue. Hey, I got the perfect way to put in the next plug.
Yeah.
And something else that Brendan had mentioned earlier that I just wanted to touch back on is this concept of like there are multiple paths to the mountain, you know, up to the mountain, because there's a lot of people that put out this like that there's this collective answer for everyone, like no, there's only one, like there's only one way, there's only one answer. And of course this has been propagated by religion and religious practices, but there isn't one. Everyone
and politics
own,
and the social group, right, over there that's advocating for the, and it's like, yeah, we've like, got the one answer and you got to be over here. Yeah.
Right.
And maybe that was the answer for a while and it worked for people to get us where we are today. But, you know, everything changes. It's like the law of entropy. Like if you're not moving up, you're moving down. So we're just going to that next step now and it's individuating. And then just to come back together because we've overcome all these other obstacles. We overcome that voice in our head. You know, we overcome this. So now we come back together and we could do some sort of collective moving up or whatever. But it's not that anybody has to do it a certain way, or you have to have the certain symbols or words, or you have to have the stone. You don't have the stone, man. Come on. You don't have a moon rock, like, you know,
right,
moonstone or whatever. Yeah.
We just totally over Sharon. She was in the middle of her thing and then we got excited and interjected a couple of things. We over Sharon for a minute there. She was still... Was there still another?
I was finishing up. I probably was almost done. But yeah, I think pretty much that was just all I was going to say is like, you know, multiple paths to the mountaintop. You're not, you know, there's not just one way. And yeah, it's just something I just thinking back about me when I was just like opening my eyes to different things as I became an adult. And just seeing lots of different ways that even different like religions would talk about things, even different just people that you encounter and people that said, oh, that they've encountered beings or, you know, entities or whatever. And like, I was just like, well, I've never encountered something like that. So to me, it was like, why are they experiencing something totally different than I am? Is there something wrong with me? Like, you know, and so you kind of go through life thinking that maybe something's wrong with you because you're not doing something like everyone else is doing. But that kind of was, I guess that was helpful to me to just open my eyes to the fact that nobody experiences the exact same thing throughout their life. Like everyone has unique experiences.
And that's actually the beauty of it. Imagine if everybody painted the exact same painting, because everybody's got to do the same thing. And this is how we proceed forward. And this is going to make things better. And this, like, imagine how fucking boring that would be if everybody always did the same painting across the whole world and we all did the same thing together at the same time. It's like, no, you're supposed to be doing something different. You've got unique gifts that you're supposed to be bringing to the table. World's waiting to receive them. Get in touch with that stuff. Bring that out. That's what gets the magic going. You know, that's what, that's what lights the fire. That's what gets it going, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. We could celebrate our uniqueness together. You know what I mean? Like in the uninverted way, instead of all doing it the same way, we do our own unique thing in our own unique artwork, if you will, or, you know, we our unique creation, and then we can come together and celebrate it. And we can all, if we look at it through the lens of adults, we can all get something out of it, no matter what your words somebody's using or how they frame it. You can look at it allegorically and see the truth, because everybody has their own truth. That's why I don't like to discount what people say when they tell me they've had an experience or the way that they see the world or whatever it is. I understand that if it's resonating with them and they're being there's truth in there, it's up to me to find the truth. It's not up to me to, you know, try to attack their the way that they're spreading the message or whatever. It's up to me to find the truth. And then what can I do with it? And then how can I work with this other conscious creator to create something beautiful in this world?
Yeah. Or just listen, you know, listen to what people have to say, and not, you don't have to like, just like Brandon and I've talked about, experience is what brings the knowing. Like, you can't know something without experiencing it. So if someone says, I saw this entity, this being, and it looked like this and whatnot, if you've never experienced that, then you're just going to go on what they're talking about, and you don't have to tell them that they're lying, or you just listen, you know, they experienced that. Who are you to tell them they didn't experience that?
Yeah.
It leaves room for being non-judgmental toward people.
Yeah. And there's a reason you're either seeing it or not seeing it for your own path, because maybe if you did see the things, it would set you down a different path, you know? Right. So be thankful for your own unique point of view, because you're the only one that has it. So people that are listening to this or watching this that might feel down on themselves, you are the only you. You are the only piece of this puzzle that comes together, and you have to fit in a unique way to make this creation. You know, if you have puzzle pieces and you're putting a puzzle together, like Spoons was doing recently, it takes all those different puzzle pieces to come together. Now, if this one puzzle piece was trying to hide under the box because he thought he was a piece of crap and he didn't fit in because he didn't look like any of the other pieces, that piece could be that sun that's in this portrait of the whole landscape of nature, if that's what the thing is. And you could be one of the most important pieces that people are going to look at, but you're hiding because you don't look like the other pieces, you know? It's like, yeah.
That's a
great allegory.
Excellent. Yeah. I was just going to say, that's an excellent metaphor.
Thank you.
Metaphor analogy, or whatever you want to call it. I don't know.
Yeah, I am pretty awesome. I'm one of those puzzle pieces. You know what I mean? That's exactly my life. I was hiding under the box and now I'm here. So
yeah, I got to get out from under the box.
Yeah.
And I have to get out from under the rock. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's getting out from something.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Hey, the world's waiting for you. Come on out. You know, it's like,
yeah, I love that.
Great stuff. So was there anything else that you wanted to touch on regarding Chiron? We're probably like an hour and a half in or something like that. I don't know.
No, nothing in particular. And I didn't do like any prep work or anything, so I don't have anything or I'm like, oh, we absolutely have to discuss this. I think actually I covered even more than I had set out to. I mean, we did like the introduction to the concept in the beginning, and then I got to discuss some of the new information I've been coming across, some of the new work that Tom Jacobs has been doing in the topic, some things that are different than what came before. And I got really excited when I came across that information, and I wasn't sure if I was going to discuss that today, depending on how the flow of the conversation went, but we got to touch upon that stuff as well. So that was interesting.
Yeah. Great.
I think these conversations you're having are very important, Davin. I just want to commend you. Thank you for coming out from under the box yourself and yeah. you know, sharing your gifts with the world, because we were waiting for you, man. Come on. You know, yeah. we started the show a year ago. What the hell took you so long?
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's why it's such a good analogy. Everybody's been through that, or it's a common thing that people are going through. Like you said, hiding under the box, beating themselves up. I'm not good enough. I'm not pretty enough. I'm not smart enough. I got this problem. I got that problem. And it's like, okay, yeah, we all got stuff going on. Work it out. And, you know, you're that missing puzzle piece. Get out here, you know?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Great analogy.
Another thing.
Such a good analogy. I'm going to have to steal it. You're going to see me sometime on another broadcast saying it as if I came up with it. And you're going to be like, I know where he got that from.
That's my joke.
Yeah. Yeah. That was
just don't forget about the little people.
Yeah. When you blow up. Sharon show.
Don't forget about the oversharing. I'm not little, so I can't even say that. One thing I do before we wrap up is I wanted to kind of circle back to is there anything you could share with your own experience of having to overcome this voice in your head or these negative ideas you had of yourself to become this content creator that you are now? Because I know there's probably people listening to this that maybe want to do their own creations. It might not even be podcasts. It could be writing. It could be art. It could be anything like that. But you know, can you think of something from your past where you had to overcome something or something that helped you along the way?
Yeah, definitely. So that's kind of how I got started with this topic, because this kind of centers in on that issue. So this business of Chiron in Aries, and then also in my sixth house and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm doing work with this stuff of my natal chart. And I'm like, okay, so what does Aries represent? And each of the signs of the zodiac kind of represents a stage of life. And there's also like a mission and a quest behind it. And this goes all around through all of the signs of the zodiac. And what is Aries about? Aries is about establishing the identity. You think of the rams with the ram's horns. They butt heads with each other. Get out of my way. I got to go climb the mountain. Now, Aries is also cardinal fire. And what does that mean? So cardinal is at the beginning of a new season. And at the beginning of a new season, it's like, you know, there's been a change. We're in a new season now. And while everybody is standing around looking stupid, like, what are we supposed to be doing now? Everything's different. The cardinal signs are the ones who step out in front and say, this is the new pathway forward. This is where we're going. This is where we're headed. And Aries is also cardinal fire. And what is fire? Fire is willpower. And it's also spirit. And it's drawing upon the energy that you need when you have to draw upon like the willpower, you know. But it's also fire energy is contagious to be around, because it's like, it's fun, it's spontaneous, it's exciting. It's that feeling of, I don't know what's going to happen next, but it looks like it's going to be fun or exciting, and I want to be there when it happens. So this cardinal fire, this business of initiating and getting things started. So I had the way that this played out in my natal chart is, this is the way that I've been interpreting it. This wound that I incurred earlier in life, it had to do with my identity and with initiating and getting things started. And also, Aries is the first of the zodiac signs. It's the beginning of the year in Western tropical astrology. And it's also the first in the order of stages of life. So this is the very beginning of the life process. This is birth. This is emerging out into the world. Here I am. And I had these confrontations, difficulties, energy blockages, whole bunch of things surrounding these issues of getting in touch with who I am, getting in touch of like, you know, feeling okay with who I am, coming out and presenting myself like, hey, here I am. The Aries way, just, hey, boldly step out in front and just do it. You know, get started, get going. A lot of doubt. There was a lot of issues that came up early in my life that caused a lot of hesitation, a lot of doubtfulness, emotional problems with surrounding these issues of like, who am I? And is it okay for me to step out and be in front and lead things forward into the new and all this type of stuff? So part of the things that I started to look at is I'm like, okay, this is in the sign of Aries. And it was so interesting as I was reflecting upon this process, the way these things played out early in my life. And I was like, that is so interesting. It is like the zodiac sign is the answer to these questions that I had for such a long time, but I hadn't quite thought about how to verbalize it or how to, I hadn't really thought it through in a conscious way before I started doing that work in the astrology. And then it started really coming forward into consciousness. I'm like, you know, that Aries path is kind of showing the way forward. Like, hey, be bold, be proud of who you are. step out and show the world, like, here I am. There's nothing wrong with you. Go ahead and step forward and present it, you know. And I'm not talking about what I'm doing on the internet with like content stuff. Like that's this, it's fun. It's a hobby. It's something that I do. It's also a second job. There's a bunch of other features to that. I like the astrology. I enjoy working with the astrology and I like sharing it with other people. So when I talk about stepping out and presenting myself, here I am, I'm not talking about on the internet or creating content or in the social media. I'm talking about in life in general, like tapping into that energy of not being scared to get in touch with who I am and also feeling okay about it. And it's okay to step out in front and announce like, hey, here I am, you know, this is who I am. I had to really get in touch with that energy and some of these areas where I was having difficulties and emotional problems and other things. Some of these things I had already done the work of sorting out before I was working with it in the astrology, but I was like really seeing the process in a more conscious way. I was like, oh, so that's why I was going through that. That's why I had to go through this stage where that thing happened. You know, that's why I went through that process when that time when this was going on in my life. You know, it's just like a lot of things really clicked together in a profound way and in a really kind of clear way. And it made me so excited about astrology that was one of the impulses that made me say, I think I want to do more about sharing this, like with other people, sharing it publicly. The it seemed that impactful and powerful, this information coming through in my natal chart, that I was like, I think more people need to learn about this stuff. You know, go get your natal chart, learn how it works, learn the basics of what's going on. You'll be amazed at some of the things you find out, some of the stories that are being told there, you know.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. Well, why don't you tell people again where they could find you? And because I'm sure you could even help somebody with their natal chart if they had questions or whatever. What's the best?
Yeah, way? I'll send you the links and you can put them in the description. So, you know, YouTube, Telegram, I've got a website going as well. On the website, people could contact me to do, you know, natal charts and other types of readings and chart work and astrology. I just recently did a synastry chart for somebody, and put a lot of work into that one as well. And that was fun. That was a little bit of a adventure because there was actually a lot going on. And if people don't know what is a synastry chart, that's when you're taking the chart of two people and you're overlapping them and looking where are the harmonies and where are the disharmonies and what kind of story or picture can be told in terms of a partnership or relationship. Or doesn't have to be a romantic couple. There's all different types of, you know, partnerships that we have with people. So it's putting two charts together. These two charts were both very dynamic. So as I sat down working on it, I was like, oh my God, there is so much going on here. It was a lot of work. But yeah, if people are interested in doing, having their natal chart read and interpreted or learning how to read and interpret the natal chart, they're all different things. That stuff's on my website. They can contact me and get into that stuff.
Awesome. What's your website?
I'll give you the links because it's, I got to spell it out and say it out.
Oh, okay. Know. Yeah.
No NIVAD 17 astrology. And then it's NIVAD17wixsite.com/forward/ hyphen with the tilde. And I forget what else is in there.
It's, like, tilde, you know, it's nice.
It's crazy.
How dare you? I love that idea of synastry chart because you can use that even like with, I don't know, your boss or like with the family member you're not getting along with. So you could take the work or the person could take the work and then say, oh, this is, you know, we might not be getting along, but then you do a synastry chart and you're like, all right, this is the story we're supposed to build. This is what's going on. It's up to me because I'm the, you know, I don't want to look at it like you're in a prideful way, but you're the one who's looking into doing self-work and to be in harmony. So why not do that, you know, and then figure it out from there. I love that.
If you did it with that intention, that could work. There's always the danger with these things, as there is with everything in life, that the person's going to say, see, I knew it was your fault. And here's all the reasons why. And I went.
Or you don't have to tell them. You just do it.
I know. But if you're thinking on that level, you're interpreting it in that way. You're still going down the wrong path. You're still, you know,
oh, so yeah. It's like
you got to bring the right intentions. You got to bring the right mindset to it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You don't want to look at it like but a victim. Just,
I'm laughing because I could see somebody really flipping it around the wrong way. Oh, I got all these different reasons why it's all their fault.
Yeah. Know? Oh, yeah.
Like, look at mine. My chart's perfect. It's all on you. It's all your fault. People love doing that stuff. And it's like, that's another thing that I like about topics and discussions that have to do with like self-reflective work. And we've talked about this before. We talked about it on my channel. We've talked about it on your channel. We've had conversations about this stuff. you know, doing that self-reflective work so that you do not go down that path of either victim mentality, blaming other people, psychological projection, projecting things outward. And it's like, hey, you got to clean up your own house. You got to take care of your own business, be your own monitor yourself. And things are going to generate and flow that way. That's how you take care of things and take care of business, you know?
Yeah. I would suggest approaching it more from an angle of like, if you are working on yourself and you're doing all this and you don't have a victim mindset, but you're still having some kind of problem or whatever it is with somebody else, you could do something like a synastry chart or even like the 16 personality types, or there's all these different ways to do it where then you could say, all right, this is how I should interact with this person. They don't perceive things the way I do. When I come at them with my point of view, I'm getting some, you know, there's like some fighting going on or whatever. Maybe I can come at it from this way or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, that victim thing.
Yeah, you're right. That's a good, I mean, if you come with that intention, that mindset, then yeah, there's a lot of great benefit you could get from working from it that way. I hope I didn't take away from that point that you were making. I took it in another direction and it was
just oversharing,
kind of being playful with the funny side of it, but also because what you said, somebody not getting along with, and then I took it in that other direction. But people could end up doing the same thing with their own natal chart, interpreting it some backwards way and, you know, psychological projection or beating themselves up are all different. And it's like, you know, that's not the work that you're doing there. You're doing the inner work, the self-reflective work, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If you're looking at it, if you're looking at anything through the lens of victim narrative, you could turn anything into a cage. You could just be like, well, this is just how the way I am. Well, what am I gonna do? And that's what I see a lot in mainstream astrology. So when people will say that to me, like, well, what, you know, this about astrology, I'm like, no, I get it, I understand, because a lot of people do use it as an excuse, but that's, you know, that's just what a victim does. You know,
I've seen that before as well.
Yeah,
but that's why you got to learn how to read the chart, because that takes you into like deeper topics within it, and there become certain things that are just unavoidable. It's like, hey, this is really what's going on, and you got to sit down and take a look at it. And there are some things that you look at and you're like, okay, you know what, that is what's going on. You know, and you're gonna, you know, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, you know.
Yeah,
100%. Sharon, is there anything else you want to add to that, what we said, or
no, I don't think so.
All right. Well, I just like to say, well, first, I'd like to say thank you to the chat. Shout out to all our oversharonites for sticking around to the end and chatting with us and hanging out. You could join us in the chat every Thursday night at 8:33 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's when we premiere our shows and we hang out there and have a grand old time. It's been going really well. So thank you guys all for that. And thank you again, Davin, for taking time to come with us and create this beautiful show that we created today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've been having so much fun doing these after that first one. Got a warm welcome and lots of warm messages from people who were there, you know, continued afterwards. And then it also turned into other conversations we've been having and other work that we've been doing since then. And it's been a lot of fun. I'm so happy you guys reached out and contacted me that first time. It's been amazing.
Yeah, so glad.
I'm really glad too. That credit goes to Sharon, definitely, for sure. We love Sharon here at the Over Sharon Show.
And also Spoons.
Yeah.
Spoons,
oh yeah.
For sure.
And Spoons, yeah.
Because it actually started with Spoons and then to Sharon. Spoons. And then here we are.
Yeah. Yeah. We have certain people that are our friends that are kind of like the unseen aspects of the Oversharing Show. So shout out to them. You guys know who you are. And yeah, it takes a village, right? You know, to raise a kid or to make a show. So we have our little Oversharing village, and I'm definitely the village idiot, but I love it. I'm the fool now. But so if you'd like
From
more
the
of the Oversharing. Yeah, exactly. The full card. If you'd like more of the Oversharing Show, just go to morelawsmoreproblems.com. Click on the Oversharing tab. You could check out our audio only podcast we do through Podbean. So it's on Apple Music. It's on Spotify. It's on all the fun places where you find podcasts, or Brandon Bonanza on YouTube. And what do we say to the good people, Sharon?
That if you're not oversharing,
then you're totally not caring.
That's right.
So keep oversharing. We'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Sharon.